Welcome to the ATT podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Case File 7, Operation High Jump. With me as always, to my left here.
Hello, I'm Zell.
I'm Braden, and we have a very special guest, our Southeast Asian alien correspondent, Mr. Dan.
That's me. Nice to be here.
How's it going, man?
Good.
For our listeners, me and Dan used to be neighbors in Thailand, and that's how we met. And so it's nice to have you on. He's the co-creator, I guess. I'll give you co-creator status because you came up with the name with me.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is because, yeah, that's what you said the first episode, yeah. Too.
So
nice.
It's nice to have the co-creator on.
Yeah, it was a good idea. And we used to sit there, watch a couple Ancient Aliens go kind of nuts. And, you know, over a couple beers, it's blossomed into this idea.
Did it start as
nice to see it come to fruition.
Yeah. It started as who are these alien theorists? And then now we got the show.
It was looking up their credentials, I think, what started it. Like, what kind of credentials do these guys have that makes them better than us?
Exactly.
And apparently nothing, not much. So yeah, today, first off, I forgot, space news. I forgot all the space news I had prepared. Oh, okay. So from now to January 4th, Earth is going to be going through a small area of debris. So you should have we'll have some meteor showers for the next couple nights. Not too impressive or crazy. A couple every now and then, they say.
No Armageddon?
No Armageddon. So don't worry about that. There was a huge solar flare. They said it was wider than Earth. There's a video of it. You can look up at spaceweather.com. They have a video of it. And at the height of the CME, it's actually wider than Earth. It's almost completely missing Earth, though. There is a small chance of auroras in the northern hemisphere. So if you're out there, take a look. Never know. It's a pretty cool sight.
Well, I know the truth is out there.
The truth is out there. Look for that. Anyways, that's it for space news. Let's get right down to it. Dan.
Operation High Jump.
Operation High Jump. You want to summarize it, or how should we do this?
How do you want to start it?
Yeah, I'll just go into a little bit of the stuff that I've picked up. And so far, it's an interest of mine, just a passing one of the few things that I know.
I'll say this. I've watched some documentaries now, too. And it's like, it's one of those.
It's mind blowing.
It's one of those like bottomless pits, like of just trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic because number one, it is fact. It did happen. Operation High Jump around 1945, 1946. A fleet of ships was launched by the U.S. Navy on what they said was an expeditionary mission to chart, mostly to train personnel, test material in frigid zones, consolidate and extend American sovereignty over the largest practical area of the Antarctic continent, determine feasibility in establishing and maintaining bases in the Antarctic, mostly things like that. They wanted to test a lot of material and the effects of personnel in cold weather. That's what they said. A lot of things kind of, when you look closer, look a little bit iffy.
Yeah, to me, the first thing that comes up when I like was looking into it was the ships that they sent. I was like, why? Like, why are you sending all this? Like,
I've heard. I have a fact here. Well, it says 4,000 military troops. I don't know if that is that something you've come across.
Yeah, it's close to. It's around four. I've heard 4,000, somewhere around 5,000, somewhere around there. But it is definitely a lot of ships and material to send to the Antarctic itself. They sent an aircraft carrier, a couple destroyers, submarines, a couple icebreakers down into there. And some of that is understandable. Icebreakers I could see, submarines I could see, but I don't really know why you would need to send a couple. I guess, I don't know. It was after World War II had ended. There wasn't any large threat from the South Pole, from the Antarctic region. Yeah. You know, I could understand. I could see it why you would send it to maybe the North Pole, because a lot of people said that they were, this was in preparation for like Cold War.
Yeah, that would, make sense, you know? Because yeah, with the Russians, the height of like the Cold War was just getting started. So to like bolster the North Pole would, that I wouldn't even look twice if they sent that to the North Pole. I'd be like, yeah, no worries. Well, of course.
Right. Exactly. And so this one, just kind of the more you look into it, the more stuff you find that is interesting, or could you can speculate upon with a lot of cool stuff. And I would, some of it sounds perfectly feasible to me. I mean, secret Nazi bases comes like right at the forefront, I think.
Yeah, pretty much Nazi bases and hidden secret Nazi bases are at the forefront of this one, I would say.
The conspiracy goes deep on the Nazi part, for sure.
Okay, so quickly, they went to Antarctica. They were on a... my phone.
Get that phone out of here. What are you doing?
You know what it keeps doing? I don't know why. My case keeps recording stuff, and then it sends it as a text message to whoever the last person I sent a text message to.
Who's getting this message?
Andrew. Because Andrew just sent me a text like, why'd you send me that? Like, are you guys doing a podcast? And I was like, how do you know? And it's because I sent him a clip of us doing the intro. And I'm like trying to turn my voice control off. So basically, the summary, they've gone to Antarctica on this so-called expedition. They've sent a kind of a suspicious-looking fleet for what they say they're doing. The one point, so, okay, so continue, Dan. So they're doing that, and now like we know why they say they're going. So what's the mystery? What's the mystery behind this?
Well, to answer or to go more into depth about that, before World War II, before the actual or near the beginning of World War II, Germany had sent expeditions, about two or three, I believe, down to the Antarctic. And what they said, they were going to expand their whaling. They wanted to expand their whaling capabilities, because back then, for Germany, whale blubber and oil was actually a huge part of their war economy that they were planning. I mean, they were getting ready for World War II. They knew it was coming, and they knew they were going to start it. There's no actual mention of, at least in any files or anything like that, that said that they established a base down there. But they did establish what they called Schwabenland, which was a large tract of land founded by one of the ships that they sent down there. So they took kind of a sovereignty over that part of the Antarctic.
Yeah.
But I mean, at that point, during that time, you couldn't actually claim land on Antarctica. It was just, they just sent a ship down there to say, okay, we're down there, and see if anybody would stop them. I think is pretty much what
they were testing the waters, kind of thing, you know, seeing how much push they could get before they got pushed back. Right.
Right.
But, you know, I also read that on those things, they were being, this was one of the documentaries that we watched, a Russian documentary that said some of their ships were intercepted, had mining equipment, right? Which was raising the suspicion, not then, but later on, right? With people now.
Oh, are you talking about the German ships or the
The German ships. Yeah,
there is mention that they were not just whaling, that they were, they were going to look into coal mining. They wanted to look for, I guess, there's a large, or at least somewhat substantial amount of coal there in Antarctica. So there were mining places down there, especially, I think, Argentina. I think Argentina, who was a Nazi sympathizer, they were Nazi sympathizers, the Argentinians. They had a semi-permanent mining facility down there or something like that.
Yeah, because I remember reading and stuff, reading that Nazi subs would come, U-boats and stuff would come into Argentina, and then they would report that they were going like through Antarctica to head back. So they were constantly using that route.
Right, which would mean that, I mean, it would make sense for them to have a base down there. I don't see why you wouldn't, you know.
And to be honest, there is, on such a landlocked nation like Germany is, to me it seems totally feasible to try to want to establish roots on the largest continent on the planet and try to like see what resources you can dig up there. Like, that to me seems totally feasible.
I've heard that before, that Antarctica has this like some of those vast resources untapped, just under the ice.
Yeah. So, like, to me, that's all 100% feasible. Like, why wouldn't you? Right. Especially, like you said, they're preparing for World War II. You know, you got to think they're getting prepared to be cut off, right, from certain things. So that makes total sense.
I think that's a lot of it. And the more you go into it after the fact that if they did have a base, there is one report of a Nazi submarine being sunk in the Straits of Malacca, which is between like Sumatra in Indonesia. That actually it's in Malaysia and Sumatra, kind of if you look for it, there was a Nazi submarine that was sunk there, and a couple of the survivors, I think it was a 60-man crew, and I think only 20 actually survived, but the survivors, after being interrogated of what their cargo was, what they were carrying, they said that they were carrying a large amount of mercury, which has been theorized, or some places has been established, that the Nazis were experimenting with mercury as a one of their fuel sources for their Wunderwaffe, or their wonder weapons.
Wonder weapon. Oh man.
Oh,
those Nazis were into some weird freaky stuff. Okay, so yeah, so we've established that they're going to make a base. So now, what does this have to do with Operation High Jump? Where does this tie in?
Now, after World War II, this Operation High Jump was sent down there pretty much right after World War II was over. And so even at that time, I mean, I know that I'm pretty sure Winston Churchill had – I forgot what it was called, but he had an operation already and set that they were going to invade Russia, you know, hoping that Russia was going to be weak at this point and it would be a good time to invade them because they might just pick up anyways where the Nazis left off and go into it. Now, if the United States and the UK were going to – they were planning on this. It seems a reason why would you send a huge force, you know, a large fleet down into the Antarctic where there's nothing.
Yeah.
Why would you send it down there? It's a huge, you're leaving a huge part of the mainland United States unguarded from what would have been, I guess, Soviet aggression.
It's weird too, even like, because that makes, with the height of the cold, like Cold War starting and stuff, that makes perfect sense that they like, that should have been a real worry. The other thing to me is, like, immediately after World War II, everyone was just crippled with debt, right? And just killed. And you're like, you know what? It'll be a good idea. Let's go check out the ice in Antarctica with all our, like, send a huge naval force. This will make money. This will be good.
Right. And they sent this huge force down there, and they were scheduled to be down there for about 6 to 8 months, but they actually returned after two. It was said that they returned after two, after some sort of there was some Chilean reports of that the ships returned after having some sort of catastrophic failure, or they had some casualties on the ice or stuff like that, and they decided to go ahead and return. But that's never really gone into depth as to why they actually returned so early. In their operation.
Yeah, I've heard they were met with resistance down there. So I have a fact here that says it was only months after Roswell that James Forrestal, which was the Secretary of the Navy, sent Operation High Jump. It was Admiral Nimitz, Admiral Crewson, and Admiral Beard. And they were going down there to locate, I guess what the conspiracy says is locate immense underground bases constructed by the Germans before, during, and immediately after the Second World War, with the aid of alien entities. So saying that the Nazis have been aided by alien entities, they had built the base at the South Pole, and America was going down there to, investigate or go to war or what they were doing, but they came back early. That was what happened, I guess.
I have a quote here. It's from on March 5th, 1947, El Mercurio, which is a newspaper of Santiago, Chile, ran an article, and they quoted Admiral Byrd, who was the leader of the, or the, pretty much the symbolic leader of Operation High Jump. He, it basically, his quote says, Admiral Admiral Byrd declared today that it was imperative for United States to initiate immediate defense measures against hostile regions. The admiral further stated that he didn't want to frighten anyone unduly, but it was a bitter reality that in case of a new war, the continental United States would be attacked by flying objects which could fly from pole to pole at incredible speeds.
Oh, my God.
Right? At that time, it was almost... It's impossible at that point to think of a craft or some sort of flying object that could travel from pole to pole at incredible speeds.
No, yeah, like that. We
had they even invented the jet engine yet? Was that in World War II they invented it or?
Yeah, they had the World War. I mean, at the end of the World War II, the Nazis had the V2 rockets, and they had the I forgot their ME. They did have a jet engine aircraft. That they use, but even then, it's the operational distance range of those kinds of aircrafts was short to be best, and you're not getting from pole to pole at incredible speeds.
Yeah, man, the flight to Thailand's 20 hours, so you're not getting we're not getting pole to pole in record speed. Yeah. So that's fucking.
And I do want to go back to what you mentioned, the person you mentioned, James Forrestal. He's got a little bit of. Conspiracy aura around him too. Like you said, this was he got the Operation High Jump got back on 1947 in April, right? 2 years after that, there was the Roswell incident in 1949, and then James Forrestal actually he ended up committing suicide under mysterious circumstances, or he died under. They ruled it a suicide, but most of the files from his investigation were classified.
What? Wait. So
say that again.
So this guy, who's at the like forefront of all this?
No. Not Admiral Byrd. Oh, James Forrestal, who was the Secretary of War or Secretary of Navy. He actually committed, or he was said to have committed suicide about 2 years after all of this. I'm pretty sure. When did Roswell happen? Roswell happened
mid 1947.
Yeah,
right. 2 years after that. 2 years after that. That's when James Forrestal was said to have committed suicide.
But all the files investigating are classified.
Yes. There's a lot of conspiracy theories surrounding that as to opposed like his part in the Roswell crash. Because April 1947 is when they came back. Then the Roswell crash was I think in July 1947.
Huh.
So April, May, July, like 2 months away.
Man, you know what? Okay. To tie this in. So let's say for a second, they went there. Okay. They go down there. They are hit with some kind of resistance, some catastrophic resistance. Let's say some sort of flying saucer, right? So they see this, or whatever. Maybe they even took one down, right? Like I've never thought about it like this. Maybe they took one down, right? And then they were trying to, you know, rebuild whatever they got, and they crashed it in Roswell. Right, and that's what the cover like. That's what started that. Like maybe those two tied together. It's kind of that, thing. I never thought of it like that.
It's different
that
for me now.
That sounds pretty good, actually.
It's different because I always thought Roswell was like the first UFO before anything else. It crashed, and from there they like reverse engineered all these new technologies. That's what I always thought, but I never really looked that much into it.
What
we're uncovering here is Roswell happened after Operation High Jump.
That's correct. Well, Operation High Jump officially ended, or the fleet, they returned around April, because I'm pretty sure they went out in like January, started about January 1947, and then March, April, and then they came back in April. And then, they were supposed to be out there for 6 months.
Okay, yeah, Roswell, July 8th, 1947.
Man, that's so weird. Okay, so that in that timeline of things... That means that whatever attacked the fleet in Antarctica, we're theorizing here, could have been shot down by them. Obviously, if you collected something like that, the first thing you're going to do is fucking hightail it back because you're not going to stick around for the rest of the time. So if you were to shoot something like that down and you collected it and saved it, you're going to hightail it back to the States, right? And then right away you're going to have scientists and shit working on it, you know, and then someone goes for a test flight and crashes it in the desert.
Okay, well, how about this? Because I know in World War II there was the Foo Fighters, which there was UFOs during dogfights that were like glowing orbs of light, kind of like saucer-shaped, before all this happened. So does it stem from Nazi technology? Did they have did they have alien spacecraft before this? They had developed it after they defeated in World War II. They had already been developing these bases in Antarctica, sent their scientists and their officials down to Antarctica to continue with these UFOs. The U.S. then found out about it in a whatever way, took a fleet down there to figure out what it was, met with resistance by whatever it was, lost some of their fleets, shot down a UFO, and now has reverse engineered it and then crashed in Roswell?
To me, I like the idea of that way more than just like something crashed in Roswell and that started it all.
Oh, it was a weather balloon in Roswell.
Yeah. Because, yeah. That's the timeline. I never looked at the timeline before of that, but, like, the timeline works so well. It's crazy. What do you think, Dan? What's your take on that?
I think your theory sounds really good. I didn't even think about that, actually, that maybe they had recovered the aircraft and they wanted to test it out as soon as possible. But then part of me thinks that, no, I've seen how slow the military can move and stuff like that. And I would think if they did recover a craft, they wouldn't be flying it around within 2 months of recovering it. I would think they would have, well, maybe, I don't know.
You know, it's hard to say though. It just depends on how excited they are and stuff, right? Like how much they're pushing for it, right? How much they're putting behind.
Yeah,
it.
I mean, if they definitely had it back or, you know, it could have either been that. But yeah, a lot of people try to draw connections with the Nazi Party and aliens, not just aliens from space, but also there's the Hollow Earth aliens. There's always that theory floating out there.
Can you give me a quick rundown of the Hollow Earth one? Because I've actually never I keep hearing it, and I keep always meaning to like quickly do a read up on it. So just give me a quick rundown of it.
I can give you a quick rundown because of what I know, but yeah, basically,
that's all I want, because all I know, I know the name, and I kind of get grasp from the name what it's entitling.
There are like a couple theories. There are a few prevailing theories. I think there's a couple of them. The ones that I mostly know of is that saying that inside the Earth, it's like the Earth is hollow. Some people say like when the Earth is hit by a meteor, it makes a sound like a bell. So that's, they say that's some sort of like, seismic activity where it sounds like a bell or it makes some sort of, noise like that. So there's evidence to suggest that inside the Earth is hollow, that there are just these immense, huge caverns, heated by some sort of internal sun. And, some people say that entrances to this Hollow Earth can be found in different places around the world, but two of them might be at the North and South Pole.
Which would then, you know, go with what Admiral Byrd was saying with pole to pole, right? If you're shooting through the center of the Earth with flying saucers,
I've heard that theory before, and it says that aliens use the center, like this Earth's centered mass, in a form of like space travel to propel them through space, kind of like a wormhole. So like that, the theory goes deep that way. But
man, that's cool.
Who knows?
You know, that one's a hard one for me just because I was brought up with the public education system and they definitely did not teach me that.
Yeah, they didn't say that. Though there is a lake in Antarctica, I can't remember what it's called, that it's under the ice and you can't just get there. You got to have a submarine or you got to go under the ice somehow. And it's always 16 degrees Celsius because of the thermal heat of the Earth. It's like a big hot spring.
Oh yeah, I've heard of it. I've heard about that too. Some of the thermal lakes that are found there, that are heated by underground vents and things like that.
Yeah, so like that kind of like plays into that theory. Is there's got maybe not hollow, but maybe water filled, or who knows? But
and one of the documentaries we watched on it kind of touched on that, where it was like, okay, so if there's thermal vents and they're heating water through the ice. It goes to warrant that there's probably underground tunnels where these rivers run through because like it melts the ice, which is why you'd bring a submarine, because that's where the entrance to bases and stuff are.
It'd be like the best fortress. If that's the only way to get there was under the ice.
Yeah.
You couldn't attack by air or land or anything. You could only go underneath.
Well, you attack by air, it'd just take a while.
Well, what if the ice was a kilometer thick? A
couple nukes, man. Just keep
firing. Couple of nukes. Yeah, just drop it. Fuck Antarctica.
Yeah. No one's there. Fuck it.
Well, speaking of nuclear bombs, there is mention of there were three bombs that were detonated, three atomic bombs that were detonated near Antarctica.
Get the fuck out of here! When
in the late 50s, they did detonate three. Our Americans detonated like three nuclear test bombs over Antarctica, or they're saying over Antarctica. I was looking at that.
Okay, and now I can understand, I understand why you would do it there because you're like, no one's there. But at the same time, it's like, why do you need to test? Why do they need to test anymore at that point? They just want bigger, badder ones?
I think they wanted to see the. Some of the statements from the documents say that it was. They were testing to see the effects of atomic particles and how they interacted with the Earth's electromagnetic field.
Ooh,
whoa. Whether it would interfere with radar tracking or communications or the electronics of even satellites and ballistic missiles. And this was in the late 50s, so 1958, 59, somewhere around that time.
Man, that's now how many. Have we, Kate, I know there's been expeditions to Antarctica and stuff, but are they isolated to one region or do they, like, have there been people all over? Like, is there parts of Antarctica right now where there's still people haven't been on?
I guess it's got to be.
Right?
Because I know that. They have bases at the pole. They have, like, a base there that's always there. But yeah. That's just at the pole. Antarctica's huge.
And it's, like, it's hard. It's a hard place to go.
Yeah.
Antarctica itself is an incredible continent and in like ecosystem in itself. I mean, there's a lot of stuff coming out from there now that we've never seen before. I mean, especially with sea levels rising and ice sheets melting, they're doing a lot more study down there in Antarctica. I mean, one of the incredible things is they found Lake Vostok. Lake Vostok is a freshwater lake that's been, it's pretty much been ice locked for what they said is almost something like millions of years. It's been isolated from the world normal or anything like that. Here it is. It's a pristine freshwater lake buried beneath about 3.7 kilometers of solid ice. And it's about the size of Lake Ontario.
Oh, wow.
It is the largest of the more than 200 liquid lakes strewn around the continent under the ice. So it's been isolated for, say, up to hundreds of thousands of millions of years, and they're trying to collect water samples from there. I believe a Russian team was successful because drilling all the way down in there, but there was fears of contamination from where they were drilling. I mean, when you're trying to poke down into something that's never been touched before. They were really worried about that.
Man, that's probably some really good tasting water.
Oh, man, some fresh spring.
that's some high-quality H2O.
That's, man, it's such refreshing. A weird place. It's such a weird place because there's could be so much, like, so much secrets hidden there, like, of the Earth. Man,
that's the one place on Earth that no one, we know, like, we've mapped it and we kind of know it, but no one's really there. Besides, like a few hundred people throughout the year.
Man, like, could you imagine if we found, maybe they have, like, seismic maps or something, like, because I'm like, maybe you'd find ruins. Like, imagine you found ruins under the ice and stuff.
Well, that's cool, too, because they've found maps of Antarctica mapped without ice.
Yeah.
And they said that would have been thousands of years ago.
I can't remember what they were called, the Peary maps or something.
Yeah, something, and it's a map of Antarctica, and it's just the land, it's not the ice. Like we can see it with like infrared. We can tell what Antarctica looks like without ice. But there's a map that has been found.
I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, me either. Because I wasn't expecting that
Dan,
to come up. But
Dan, do you know what that one's called? You've heard of that one?
No, I've heard of it and I've read about it, but I've forgotten the name. But yeah, it was. I think it was said to be. It's reported to be attributed to some sort of like Turkish naval general or naval admiral or something like that. Some sort of teacher. I think it was from Turkey or somewhere they found it. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was either accurate or copied from an accurate one. That, I mean, if you think back through the ages about how much knowledge has been lost, I mean, just if you think of like the burning of the library at Alexandria and how much knowledge was lost there, why I think it would be perfectly acceptable that maybe that was a copy of a map that had been or somebody had seen there in the Library of Alexandria before it got burnt, and it was just buried back there somewhere.
So real quick, man, you're bringing so much good information to the table, so much that in fact that I'm starting to feel lost. Give me a rundown of what the Library of Alexandria is.
The Library of Alexandria was a huge library back in ancient days before anything, and it was it was just a huge depository of all. I mean, Alexandria in Egypt was a city that was renowned for its scholars and things like that back in the ancient days.
It was part of the Roman Empire, wasn't it, Alexandria?
It was at that point. When it got burned down, I'm not sure.
Exactly did it get burnt? So it was a collection of like all the knowledge, essentially.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it was like it was the Huns or it was the Khan or Genghis Khan. I think it was the Huns.
That sounds right. Actually, I think.
Man, that's fucking crazy.
I'm pretty sure like when they got down there, they just burned the whole thing, and they said that the whole river ran black with all the ink of all the stuff. Like they burned the library, and they took all the scrolls and everything, the parchments, and they just threw them into the river. Where in the Nile, and they just said it ran black with all the ink of all the stuff that was thrown in there.
So it was supposed to, that was the biggest library at the time, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah,
so
I think it was burned.
All the knowledge of the world burned at once, pretty much.
Yeah, it was in 391 AD.
Oh,
wow.
When it was destroyed. And it was just, it had been just accumulating all the amount of scrolls and things like that. Some people have stated, some scholars and stuff have stated that it set back like the human knowledge, like collective human knowledge. It set us back like 1,000 to 2,000 years, I think, something like that.
When I hear something like that, it just boggles my mind. Like how much. Do we just find out now what we knew back then or what?
Man, it'd be like someone going on right now and just wiping the internet clean.
Just boom, boom, done.
Like straight to zero. Like how much stuff we do now isn't backed up. Like we would lose an insane amount of just
information. Well, it'd all be in textbooks, and then to find the information would just take forever again.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. That's fucking crazy.
Anyways, Operation High Jump.
Okay, so
let's backtrack a bit. What do you know? What's your thoughts on like the Nazi Party and UFO technology?
I am totally down with the fact of Nazis and UFO technology, but I don't know about the. I'm not so sure about contact with extraterrestrials. Like I'm more in the agreement that they had. Really great scientists. I mean, Germans have really great work ethic, and that maybe they came up with some pretty cool stuff. But the one thing that kind of comes to mind is the have you guys ever heard of the Bell, the Glocka?
Yep.
Or whatever,
yeah, the Glocka.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's what they were. Some people say that was on one of the submarines. That's where it went. That they took the Diglaka, whatever that was. Nobody really knows what it was. I mean, I've seen a couple pictures, but nobody's really sure what it is. Or I've never heard. I mean, through all the stuff I've combed through, I haven't been able to find a definitive answer of what it is or what it did.
So what are some of the leading theories of what the Diglaka is?
The Diglaka, I mean, people are saying time travel. People are saying, interspace travel, gravity control, anti-gravity, those are the pretty much, I think, the prevailing theories of what it was or what it did, or those are the high speculations of what it is. As far as I know, there's only really like one picture or one reliable picture of it. And it's just nobody really knows what it is, or there's only like one small mention of it somewhere. But nobody was after World War II, nobody was able to find it. And they're saying that maybe that it was taken down to those secret Nazi bases under the ice shelves of Antarctica and hidden there and maybe experimented further with or things like that.
Man, I agree with that because I've heard the Nazis, they thought differently of science. Like they went about it a different way than Western science. And I've heard that they've found a different way to fly. And it was like the anti-gravity, the counter-rotating magnetic disc in a saucer shape. And they had just started to get that technology to work when they were defeated in World War II. Because there was the Foo Fighters, and they said that's what they were. They weren't really military armed yet, but they could fly. And they were just starting to harness the power of it, and they defeated. And then at the end of the war, there was all these Nazi bases that were they just destroyed. They got rid of all the evidence. They destroyed all the files. And all that technology was just lost, and then they took it to Antarctica in another Nazi base, and that's the conspiracy. But that's what, kind of what I believe too, that they had wasn't aliens. They just had a different way of thinking about science, and they figured it out, and then then it was too late for them.
Yeah, and I feel like that jives with the most of the stuff that went down there. I mean, when they talk about nuclear testing down there, I'm like, no, like you went down there. I'm feeling like they went down there with I mean, you could make a narrative of where the United States fleet went down there. They got beat back because they had the, you know, or maybe there was some sort of a battle between them and these UFOs or whatever. But the Nazis took some heavy hits, and then the United States said, "Okay, fuck it, let's go back there with nukes and just like nuke the hell out of them," and that finished it or something like that. Because it was, you know.
Man, you know what, though, too? Because that's a weird thing, even before you were saying where they were going to test the nuclear missiles to see if they would interfere with radio and shit. That's a fucking big gamble. Like, imagine it did, right? And they're like, oh, you know what? We just fucked up all radio. Like, you know what? Everything's down for good. We fucked it up. Like, that's such a big gamble to take. It's like, yeah, we're just going to try this out. No big deal. Yeah.
And I mean, but they have like, I mean, if there were Nazi bases down there, I mean, all that kind of stuff, they got great cover for it. Cause I mean, this was the Cold War and pretty much anything flew, you know, I mean, the US and the Soviets pretty much had unlimited power in what they were doing. You know, if you said, yeah, we were testing nukes and no, back then, I mean, the public didn't have that much knowledge of like nuclear radiation, like what it did or, you know, the effects of whatever. So nobody's going to be like, oh, cool. You set off really big bombs down there in Antarctica. Oh, there's nothing down there but penguins. Who cares?
Yeah, fuck those penguins. Man, the whole story of that's just so fucking weird. And it's strange, too, because like if you think, say they did send the De Glocken away, right? Say they sent it away. Say they fucking destroyed it. We don't know. But let's just say there was something somewhere they read that it was sent like on a U-boat or something. You got to think if the Americans or the Russians got a hold of that information in that time, they'd be like, we're finding this. Like, we are going to get this. We need to get it before the States does, or we need to get it before Russia does. Right? Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely sounds like something the U.S. would do at that point. I mean, we had the naval... we had the naval resources to do it. I mean, we had at that point, you know, Russia had more invested in the war than we did really, in terms of manpower. So, I mean, if we were like, we need to get a hold of this stuff or make sure that the Nazis are really dead. I mean, it would make sense to send a large expeditionary force down there, to figure out what had gone. I mean, there was one thing that did kind of set off some of the theories for extra Nazi bases is that the admiral, what is his name? Like the high admiral of the German forces. I cannot.
Oh, you know what? I remember hearing about this too. Like, I don't know his name offhand, but he was saying weird shit, right?
Yeah, at the Nuremberg trials when they had him on, and I cannot. I had his name on the tip of my tongue, and it just gone now. But he mentioned something about there was some little like kind of just a little blurb that he said something about there's a Shangri-La located under the ices or under the ice of Antarctica for Nazis or something. I've heard that before.
I remember hearing that.
He made some sort of unusual statement about that.
Okay, I'm about to make a stretch of a conspiracy here.
Okay, let's hear it. I like it.
So World War II, the Nazis had the Foo Fighters. They're not sure whose they were, but they were the Foo Fighters. Then World War II, the UFO kind of objects. World War II ended. The Nazis were disbanded, and it's no secret that America took a lot, or like I guess not took, but inherited a lot of those Nazi scientists.
Oh yeah, Operation Paperclip.
Those scientists that could have worked on DeGlocken or in those other UFOs have maybe now, with the states, developed their own set of UFOs, and that's why the sightings of UFOs in the states is rampant ever since Roswell, pretty much. So this is my stretch. That UFOs were developed by the Nazis. Nazis were defeated, and maybe they went to Antarctica with the DeGlocken, but some of the scientists that worked on it have been taken by the states. The states have developed their own UFOs, their own flying saucers, and that's what people see now.
I could get on board with it. You could stretch a connection between I get the Roswell and at the end of Operation High Jump, like maybe they did shoot one down and they brought it back and then they were testing it over New Mexico, which is New Mexico itself is that's where you made the atom bomb. That's where you got all kinds of secret bases.
We can actually add something in there that kind of fixed your timeline, what we were talking earlier. Say they shoot one down there. They've inherited these Nazi scientists because you were saying, you know how the military doesn't work that fast. But if you now had scientists who were intimate knowledge on what was shot down, you know what I mean?
Like they already knew.
Yeah. They already knew, right? So that could be all they needed was the tech there to kind of like back engineer it.
Yeah,
and
I can follow that.
Speeds that up. I kind of like that. I like that theory a little better than...
Well, like,
I get on board with it.
I love the theory as my original theory before I really knew anything about conspiracy at all was there was not really a lot of sighted UFOs in modern history until the detonation of the atomic bombs in whatever they were, 1942 or whatever it was. And as soon as that happened, I've always thought that whatever civilization has been watching us for thousands of years develop as a civilization, they watched us develop nuclear power, and then they came.
I can get on board with that. Like that was like a signal. Like you know what? Sometimes
I mean that's the whole the day the Earth stood still kind of thing. That you know. We stood on the brink of space exploration, or we had nuclear weapons, and you know aliens don't want us running around in the galaxy or our solar system. Really yeah,
breaking the galactic
bunch of
pact.
Yeah breaking.
Man, I can see that though too, because I always thought too sometimes where I'm like, you know, maybe we started firing those off and maybe it was something new for them, right? Like maybe outside civilizations didn't have that kind of weapon capability.
Or maybe what was it when you guys mentioned the last one, the Black Knight satellite? Maybe that's what it's there for.
Yeah.
Detected nuclear. It set off some sort of signal.
Oh
and,
my god! It just blew my mind.
You just gave me shivers, man. You're tying it
and
all together.
Just,
okay, we're
so gonna, maybe we're gonna, it just sits there to you know it's there to monitor certain.
We're going to pump all the theories together real quick here. I'm going to do it in about 15 seconds. So a million years ago, alien astronauts came to Earth. They genetically modified chimp DNA to be smarter and more intelligent. After 500,000 years, we became intelligent and a civilized race. They then dropped in this satellite to watch us, and this whole time they've been watching us progress as a nation or as a civilized race until we finally invented nuclear fission. And like, you know what? It's time to go set them straight because they're going to destroy themselves.
Right. Yeah. Or maybe it's just the fact that it monitors certain like waypoints on our, you know, our progression as a society or like a whatever.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah. That's
and that was a marker, right? That they can, and that's why they're sending, you see more UFOs now because they're coming.
Yeah. It's like, what is it? Like a Space Odyssey 2001 where, you know, you have like the chimps with the giant black monoliths. Like every time humans hit a certain point, then like the aliens come in or they send something, a message or something like that.
Yeah.
Which We could have received a message, and maybe the government has a hold of that, and they're just not telling us.
That's
so
a whole other conspiracy right there.
Oh, man, that's good. Man, that's we just made so many connections there. Like, it just, I got shivers there when you started bringing up the Black
the
Knight
Black,
satellite.
As you said the Black satellite. I was like, oh, fuck.
That's crazy. Because I was looking into more of that, and I was like, you know what? It's kind of weird. Like, I was looking at pictures and looking at people saying, and like, I was like, man, it's a strange
I thought
one.
About it, too, because it's weird because satellites eventually succumb to gravity. And they eventually come down, and they like bring them down in the ocean or whatever.
But if they have to make certain, you know, they have to make adjustments.
Yeah, they always they have to correct it to keep it in orbit, right?
Yeah.
But for that thing to be there to say whatever thousands of years it's been, just wouldn't happen without like no. It's not a moon. It's a very small piece of mass. It's not just going to stay in orbit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So something's keeping it there. Oh man. Now if that it's something working against with gravity, right? Maybe you know maybe. Like something like the Nazis were experimenting with the counter-rotating disc, and they were playing with gravity and anti-gravity stuff. Like that could be harnessing that kind of power there.
And gravity has just blown my mind in the past year.
Yeah, Interstellar.
Just thinking of gravity and time as another dimension has just blown my mind. Got to say,
it's a tough one. I've really liked where this Operation High Jump discussion has taken us all over the place. But it's been
good. Yeah, I mean, it's a great subject, and there's just. I like the fact that it is like any speculation can be based in fact. Like this actually happened. It is really strange, and there's a lot of stuff there. I mean, there's people say that it can all be kind of tied up in a neat little bow, but the more you get into it, the more it's weird. Like I said, like you know, some of the people connected with it, Admiral Byrd himself, it said that he published his missing journal, which had him encountering hollow Earth aliens. Or a hollow Earth life.
What?
Whoa.
You guys didn't know about that.
No. So, okay. Get into that a little bit. That's not a yada, Admiral, yada, yada. You got to give us some more on that. Get just.
Admiral, is it James Byrd? I'm getting off my head here. Richard Byrd, sorry. Admiral Richard Byrd.
Dick Byrd.
Dick Byrd.
We'll refer to him as Dick Byrd from here on out.
Dick Byrd. Dick Byrd. As good old Dick did. He, if you go on Amazon.com and you look up this thing, it has The Missing Diary of Admiral Richard E. Byrd. And the author is slated as being Richard E. Byrd, him. And, I mean, I've read through parts of it and, not the, like, excerpts and stuff, but people have looked at it, and it has Admiral Byrd, during one of his flights, like across Antarctica, they ran into some sort of, Eden of some sort of, like isolated, like biome down there where they had, it mentions like, large beasts that resembled woolly mammoths or something like this. And it say that, I know it sounds really crazy and it sounds really nuts. And I'm not sure if maybe he put it out just to be, like it was published like after, I'm pretty sure like after he died, or said it was found or something like that. But, I've tried to look into it and nobody really has any, like a lot of definitive information about it, I guess. So if it's not, if the information isn't there, it's always kind of open to speculation. But it mentions him going in there with a plane, and he had like a crew of two or three other men, and their plane was the controls of their planes was wrenched away from them, and then they were guided into some sort of airport or facility where beings, the beings that were the, I think some people were saying that these were the Aryans, like the ones that the Nazis believed that they were.
I've heard that before. I've heard that before.
And they talked to Admiral Byrd, and they told him about your race is going to face a crisis in the coming decades or years or something like that. And they were saying that they had some of the Nazi scientists there. The beings told Richard Byrd that we had some of their scientists were staying with them or something like that. As far as I know, but yeah, I don't know if he was just maybe he was going a little bit crazy or something like that. You know, I'm just not sure. But there is a diary that's attributed to Richard E. Byrd that has all this kind of weird stuff
in it. That shit is getting illegally downloaded tonight. I'm going to check this out.
It's only a couple pages long. It's really not that. I was reading the reviews of it, and they're like, this could have just been 7 pages long, and it didn't need to be so long or something like that. But it reads. When I was reading parts of it, he's writing about, it's like he's writing as he's thinking. And it's like a part of it. It's like the controls have been taken away from us. We're going down towards some sort of. We're being pulled, and you're like, wait, why would you be writing that if it was actually happening?
Yeah, that's
like,
kind of weird. That's a weird.
It's
way
weird,
to
but at the same time, that's not the first time we've heard of the other conspiracies saying that flight craft or nuclear weapons have been disarmed remotely from another unidentified source. So. Yeah. It can happen, I guess.
But the thing, that's not the questioning. The questioning is, people don't really write like that. They don't write like, you would be like, how you would write that is you would go, oh, and then it was odd because the flights seemed to be taken. You don't write in astonishment, right? You write in reflecting, right? You're more reflective. So that sounds to me like maybe he was trying to write a story and then that got found and you know what I mean?
Admiral Byrd, after Operation High Jump and after most of his post World War II career, he was I think he was pretty reclusive. He didn't do a lot of talking after that. He was a pretty back in the 40s and 40s, he was a big face. They have a stamp. They have a commemorative stamp for him.
He was one of the leaders of the Navy, wasn't he?
He was kind of a symbol. He wasn't really. He was more like for show.
What's an admiral? Because I don't really know my military terms.
Usually, you have a couple admirals. You have admirals for each fleet. Right now, the U.S. Navy fields about. I'm pretty sure 7. I think we have 7 fleets. One for pretty much every operating theater. So you have an admiral for each one.
You're pretty much at the top, though.
Right, admiral. And then there's he's up there, but his title as an admiral was more honorary. It wasn't like he would actually commanded forces. It was more his service to the country and doing the expeditions
and his expertise of the area kind of thing.
Yeah,
he's kind of a celebrity, but with expertise.
Yeah. He was an actual naval officer at one point. He did make it up, I think, to a lieutenant junior grade in his naval career. But then he had a problem with his foot, so he had to be medically retired. And he spent some of it at a training facility. But he still kept on doing work for the Navy and developing navigational tools and things that they used.
He was a straight up G. The guy was awesome.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense that he would want to lie to the public or misstrew the public at all.
You know, and there is Byrd was, if you want to take it into another direction, he was an active Freemason, if you believe the stuff about that.
That's a whole nother conspiracy.
That's a whole nother topic. We could go on that for a while.
So, like I said, the Operation High Jump and stuff had a lot of stuff in it that's just this Richard E. Byrd character, him himself is he's an interesting character. James Forrestal, the Secretary of War and Secretary of Navy, like you said, he died under mysterious circumstances. He was around for Roswell, at the end of World War II, died under mysterious circumstances.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of hanging threads for you to pull at kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're getting pretty close to the end of this one. We got to start wrapping it up. We got to do some shout outs, I think, this one. I've been neglecting shout outs for a while. I'd like to give a shout out to 98 Problems Podcast. They're a really awesome podcast. Look them up on iTunes. I forgot their Twitter handle. I think they're following us, so I'll post a tweet going to them. They've been awesome. They're all very supportive guys. And Afterburn 739 down in the States there. We love your stuff. You guys are always good to us. So we love you guys' work. Anything else we need to plug? Oh, Meteor Studios, always bringing you this podcast. Big room or small room, big sound. www.meteor-recording.com. This episode of ATT Podcast is sponsored by Octavia Vodka, sophisticated taste, embracing the mystery of the night.
Are we actually sponsored by them?
Yeah, 100%.
Why haven't we opened that bottle?
I don't know. It's a Mickey. It's a Mickey vodka, and it's 43% alcohol. That's why we didn't. We wouldn't have got through this.
The conversation would have been a lot less. But you meaningful. Know
what? Their tagline: sophisticated taste, embracing the mystery of the night.
You know what? That's actually pretty fitting.
It's pretty fitting.
Is it manufactured by vampires? Like, is that?
It's brewed in Langley, British Columbia,
Transylvania,
using the finest Canadian grain and natural purified water.
You know what?
So if you want to look into Octavia vodka, you can go online and look it up. I don't have the website off by hand. So.
All right. Well, one more shout out.
Sounds good.
One more shout out to our American alien correspondent, Hayden, the first guy on the show.
Yeah, we loved Hayden.
He had no idea what to expect when he came on, neither did we, but it ended up pretty good, I think.
Yeah, we liked Hayden. Hayden sent us an email saying he was a little nervous, but we loved you, Hayden. We're going to have you on another time. Don't you worry. We loved you having. Love having you on. Dan, anything you want to plug?
Nope, not off the top of my head. I think I'm good.
Dan, you were the man.
Yeah, man, you were awesome on this one. Very knowledgeable. So we'd like to thank our Southeast Asian alien correspondent,
Dan.
All right.
You're the man.
Anything else? I feel like we're forgetting something.
You know what? Well, like Operation High Jump, I feel like you could just talk for like hours and hours and hours. But anyone listening, do your research. We've got a good start on it, but there's this like it's endless.
It's never ending. And honestly, lots of conspiracies that we'll talk about in the future are gonna tie into this. It's insane. How much shit ties in?
It's a focal point of conspiracy. Yeah,
how much shit ties in with Operation High Jump? It's insane. So definitely,
it's a wonderful jumping off point. Anybody who's just getting into conspiracies or just wants something fun to do, whenever it's cool to look into. A lot of stuff, information is out there, and you know, take it on yourself and look up what you want to look up, and it's cool.
Exactly. Oh yeah. Here's what I wanted to plug. We're now on Facebook. So if you don't have Twitter...
Oh, yeah, that's right. I like the page. Yeah.
Yeah. And so alien theorists theorizing on Facebook.
Was that a hint?
Yeah, that was a hint to you to fix that.
All right.
And follow us on Twitter, as always, at Truth Is Out There, T-H-U-R-R, on Twitter. We always respond to anything. And if you have any... feedback or suggestions, or you want us to talk about something... I can't remember his name. He keeps bugging me to talk about paranormal stuff. Next podcast, we're doing a paranormal podcast.
We're doing paranormal?
Oh, Dan, you want to come back on for that one?
Which one? Paranormal as in... I don't
chat about that. Supernatural, ghosts. Maybe we'll talk about that El Chupacabra or something. I don't know.
Who knows?
Something like on that kind of level. I'm thinking more ghosts. Maybe we'll bring up a couple famous ghost stories or ghost videos or something. And kind of dissect them or something. Because we all know the Thais, they love their ghosts. So, right? So
they don't believe it. Just, you know, they put their, you know, you burn some incense around here and you move a lamp in a certain direction and that keeps the ghosts away, you know, whatever.
we'll get into that one next on the, Dan, actually, before we go, that's what I was forgetting. You're a second guest. We're going to sit you in the hot seat and do some quick fire conspiracy questions at you.
All right, go for it.
Alrighty. Dan, have we landed on the moon, yes or no?
I'm going to go with yes.
Yes? Was it the Americans first?
Yes.
Okay.
Unless it was the Nazi super base. I'm not sure.
Nazi super base, that's a good one.
Okay, did the... Who assassinated JFK?
I'd go with mafia.
Yeah,
mafia.
Was Lee Harvey Oswald the lone shooter?
Yes. Oh, I know. You know what? No, it was probably him and one other guy. Lee Harvey Oswald.
Grassy Knoll, right? Grassy Knoll.
It could be like that.
Who made the pyramids?
I'd say. I wouldn't say who it was, but I'd say probably he could have just been a hired hitman, and then Harvey Oswald was just a fall guy. I'd go with that.
No.
Who made the pyramids?
Oh, sorry, my bad. Who made the pyramids?
Lee Harvey Oswald and one other guy.
they moved all those millions of stones real quick.
Using the Nazi time travel technology. We tied it all together.
He
figured it out.
He hopped on the Glacka and he went back and he built his pyramids.
Yeah. Oh, shit, that's funny.
I'd say probably civilization before. I wouldn't say the Egyptians. I'd say someone else probably.
Some advanced civilization. Okay.
Yeah, and okay, you know what we're gonna start? We're gonna start an ATT pool, kind of thing. So right now you're gonna be the first one. We'll get Hayden's question. We'll throw it on there, and the winner we'll give a prize to of some kind. When do you think
we will? What kind of prize are we gonna?
I don't know yet, because it's gonna be when you hear the pool. I'll send you something. I'll send you. You know what? The winner of this pool, I will send a Mickey of Octavia vodka.
Boom.
Fantastic.
The pool is, you're going to be the first one in the pool. When do we find intelligent life?
Intelligent life.
Intelligent life.
You can pick a year or a month.
I'm going to go for 20. I want to say 2025.
2025. Dan's in. 2025. Wait,
haven't we already found intelligent life? Just no one's telling us about it.
Well, maybe. Okay, so when is it unreleased?
Maybe we already did. Maybe 19...
Yeah, okay, but I'm saying then, in that case, when is it released to the public? Like, when is it public knowledge that there's intelligent life in the universe?
I'm going to go with 2025.
2025, okay.
There
you
go.
You know, yes.
You may get a bottle of vodka in 9 years.
Yeah, you may not. So don't count your, yes. Don't get your hopes up. Okay, so I think that's the podcast. Hey, anything else?
Nope, that was, Dan, thanks, buddy, for coming on.
Hey, no problem. That's fun.
You know what?
I'll do it again.
I keep fucking forgetting to say the Dr. Ian Malcolm line naturally. I just keep forgetting. So life will find a way. Keep those eyes on the skies.
All right, man. See you later.